Welcome back to Two Halves Make a Whole. I'm Mike Cherney.
And I'm Aaron Plumenthal.
And we are here to bring you potentially useful financial advice, news, or otherwise.
This is going to be both, we'll call it tactics, and a lot of otherwise as well. So
maybe a little strategy in there too.
Just a minute amount.
So a few episodes back, we went through what's known as the FIRE movement, or the financial independence retire early movement. Yeah. And a lot of it stems across how you save your money now to be able to retire early. And what we wanted to go through versus just an overview of what the FIRE movement was to go through some of the strategy and tactics or things that you could do to be able to achieve it versus just kind of telling you about it, letting you know what are some of those avenues to get you there.
Exactly. And so, you know, this all goes back to sort of the, I think it was Ben Franklin that said, a penny saved is a penny earned. So as much as you
jump right into the history. Oh, love it.
I mean, obviously that's what I do. So like what you want to do with financial, with retiring early, right? So trying to get financial independence. One of the big key things is trying to get rid of debt, right? If you talk to anybody that's super into the FIRE movement, one of the big things they'll say is that basically debt should be a fire underneath your butt, and it should get you moving. You need to pay that down as quick as possible. And I think we've obliquely mentioned this, but there's two specific strategies when it comes to debt. So the first one is called the snowball that we'll talk about. And then the second one is the avalanche. And both of these have very specific psychological benefits, and they have their detractions. So the snowball is both of these, basically what you want to do first and foremost, actually before I get into it, is you want to list out your debts, the amount that each debt is, and then the rate that debt is accruing interest.
And this is the really important part, because as Aaron's about to talk about, having that fat rate is what's going to really hamper your ability to be able to save money at the rate you want to achieve your goals.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like mathematically, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to attack the one that has the highest interest rate first, no matter how big that is.
Or small.
Yeah. However, part of the reason that there are two distinct ways of approaching this is because sometimes if that's the biggest debt that you've accrued, that can be a little intimidating looking at it and saying, holy cow, that's literally 60% of what I'm owing. I'm never going to pay this down. So one of the methods talks about actually taking your smallest debt you have first, paying it down, not really caring about what the interest is. This is the snowball, because what this lets you do is, or this, sorry, this is the avalanche, because you're going to kill that debt. That's going to give you a mental boost. It's going to give you a psychological boost. Then you can go to the next one, and you can kill that, and you can kind of, and so you're getting there, right? But the other method, basically what you do is you start paying down the biggest, highest interest rate you possibly can first, and pay and basically keep everything else paying the minimum, kill that one first, and put as much as you can to bring that one down first. Like math wise, that's the better option. But if we used pure math and instead of psychology, that doesn't make sense, because you didn't get there by logically looking at the amount and saying, that makes sense. You got there due to psychological things, right? So there are reasons to go with sort of the less advantageous method first.
And if you're wondering, so say you can't pay some of these down, you have a couple different debts, you might have different credit cards that have different rates on them. There's different ways to go about tackling that. And you can pay it outright, and that's kind of the more direct approach. You can just put your money towards it. You can pay monthly. You can pay lump sums. But another method is also seeing if you can roll your debt from one source to another. So if we use credit cards as an example, say you have two different credit cards, And one is a low interest rate or a free interest rate for, you know, a certain amount of promotional period. And another one's charging you 19, 25%, something like that. You can potentially move the amount that you have to pay on that card to a different lower interest rate. And so this is a balance transfer. And what that allows you to do, while the number is still the same, right? You haven't paid down any debt, but that principal that you owe on moves to a lower interest rate. And so therefore you can tackle that debt without necessarily tackling it outright. And what you end up doing is you'll accrue interest at a lower rate, and by having less interest to accrue, you then have to pay down less as you're working towards getting that accomplished.
Yeah. And I guess, like, even kind of taking a step back, there are multiple parts of every loan. And this might sound sort of illogical, but there's sort of the interest payments, and then there's the principal. The principal is like the initial amount that you took out on that loan. So suppose I bought a car for 10 grand, right? It's a pre-owned Kia Sedona. I didn't actually do that, but just suppose we took out, you know, some car for 10 grand. And the 10 grand, that's your principal. That's the amount of the loan initially. As you pay this loan down, you accrue interest. And so that interest builds. And then there's, and so that basically adds on a percentage. So that's like accruing interest. And then there's a couple different financial things that can potentially happen where that becomes the principal. Somewhere you can, where it separates out. And so that actually has to do with whether or not it's compounding. But for now, we'll just kind of keep it simple that those are, you know, the interest you accrue is different than the principal. And you still have to pay both.
Correct.
So this is like first and foremost is like with one of the big rules with FIRE is you got to kill debts, right? Those debts, if you have them, those are going to kill you. So that is first and foremost. So there's a bunch of ways. And like I said before, just remember that like you didn't get there purposefully. Potentially, hopefully, there was a lot of good decisions along the way, right? There's a reason that like I'm a little chunky. I didn't wake up one day and go, you know what, I want to be slightly fluffy, right? But there's plenty of pieces of cake along the way. I didn't get there logically with math. So I'm not going to get myself out logically with math. I need to do certain things to kind of push me in that direction. So there are multiple ways of approaching this, so just don't feel bad if you feel like you're stuck, because you're not. There's different ways that you can go through this, and like maybe what you have to do is pay all, you know, pay a little bit more on each of them. But if you can pay just, you know, which is not ideal, basically paying, you know, a little bit above the minimum, but if you have a little extra, see if you could pay more towards the one that has the highest interest rate, right? I understand everybody's in a different situation, but there's a couple different ways of approaching this. So that's first and foremost. Second, now that you've defeated debt, theoretically, what you want to now do is save as much money as you possibly can. There's a quote from, I think it's Warren Buffett, that's like, when you live in your 20s, you shouldn't be living the good life. You should live like you're in your 20s. So what he means here essentially is you don't have to live lavishly. If you can afford to and you feel comfortable living underneath your means, that's even better. The more quote unquote underneath your means that you can live, and the more of your money that you can put into savings, the better off you are. So one way of thinking about this, again with math, totally aware, is suppose you put 75% of every cent you make, 75% of it, into savings or into a retirement fund, right? So you're living off of 25%. You are going to, I think I did the math earlier, I think it was 4 months it's going to take for you to basically save all the amount of money that you need to spend for the year if you can live off of only 25% of your income. this is not realistic for a lot of people for a whole host of reasons, but the more money that you can save and the less that you need to live off of, the longer your dollars are going to stretch.
And this is actually, again, ties back to something else that we talked to in a very early episode was, what's your goal? Mm-hmm. So if you understand what your goal really is, and for this example, we'll say it's retiring early, say it's by 40, say it's by 50, even by 60, so you don't have to wait until you're 65. What do you need to do to get there? And if, you know, there's lots of cool catchphrases out there and, yeah. and memes and, you know, inspirational quotes about, you know, not letting anything get in the way of what you want to do and living like there's no tomorrow. But if you do that, then your tomorrow is going to really not be pleasant. So for all intents and purposes, you're going to plan as if there is one, and living within your means is going to give you the best ability to realize your goal. If you're going out and partying and spending hundreds of dollars every night, you're going to have a really hard time being able to achieve that goal. And so things that you can cut out, and again, we talked about the psychology, we've talked about this in a little bit in previous episodes, but it's not about living like you're in poverty. It's not about living like you have nothing or cutting everything out, not eating a lot of food. We're talking, what can you sacrifice that doesn't impact your feelings, your way of life? Like there's things you can cut back. Say if you normally have, you go out and you have 5 beers and you decide to have 4 beers. Mm-hmm. Will it really change your way of life? Probably not. But every time you say you take that away, and looking at this on a grander scheme, and I'll tie back to, you know, Aaron's math examples, that's a 20% reduction in your alcohol costs, which is substantial. If you really took, and this is probably painful, I know the first time I ever did this was pretty painful, when I looked at how much I spent at the bars on with, you know, extra alcohol at meals and just buying it to have at my house, it's like, wow, that is a more of a significant percentage of the income I make spent on things that are not good for me, but are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But if you can figure out a way to reduce that by 20%, it's a meaningful number. And if that can go directly into savings, then that 20%, instead of being spent, now you have it to collect interest on or to be able to invest in or to pay down debt with. So yeah. It's all positive things by cutting out something that really doesn't hamper your lifestyle. And finding things like that are some of the most critical areas of being able to find ways to save or cut costs, so that you can achieve the goals you're looking to achieve.
Yeah. So you mentioned two things there that I will, that I'm going to build off of a little bit. So the first one is basically review. You had a budget, right? So that a budget is one of the biggest things you can do to see where your money is actually going, right? I promise you, a majority of Americans do not have a budget that they stick to. For everybody, it's sort of like, it's a set it and forget it thing. You make it in Excel, you make it on a legal pad, you make it on the back of a napkin.
Stick it in Mint and forget about it.
Yes, most of the time.
Lose your password.
Yeah, it sounds personal. I'm in the exact same boat. So like, but if you have a budget, then you know what you actually, like what you need. The other thing is you need to be realistic about your budget. So a lot of people in the FIRE community go to the point of excess, right? And I mean this in a weird inverse way. Usually when you say someone's gone to the point of excess, you mean instead of buying 4 or 5 beers, it's 10. What a lot of people actually do is they have insane Excel spreadsheets where they're using like Monte Carlo simulations to kind of calculate exactly how much, you know, rice is gonna cost in a year, so that way they can figure out like, how can I cut cents out? Like, I'm going to wear these shoes. There's literally a comment on the FIRE Reddit thread. The FIRE Reddit thread. Oh my gosh, that's bad.
I like that.
The Reddit thread I prefer.
Yeah, that sounds as catchy.
Yeah. But what this guy was talking about, I don't think I need to wear to change my shoes for the next year because I think that these will last me another year, which is, don't do that, right? Like,
I mean, if they're falling apart, you should probably change. But if they're good, then you probably shouldn't.
You probably shouldn't. But the point I'm trying to make is kind of going back to that like eating example, like your food, if I only ate like a cup of broccoli, you know, a third of a sweet potato and like a chicken breast.
Sound like our old wrestling friends.
Oh my God. I know that's, let's not talk about that. That's a, that's deep and dark.
Sore spot.
Very, very, very dark. It was a lot less than that. But if you, if that's all you eat, you know, every meal, you will lose weight. You just will. Like, you are, I mean,
But you'll be miserable.
But you will definitely want to hurt people
around you. It's going to change the way you're living, and it's going to change your, I mean, it really does actually change your brain chemistry, right? Based on the foods you eat. So you're going to be irritable if you're really cutting down. You're not eating enough. You're kind of, you're actually starving yourself to a certain point if you're not taking in enough food based on what you're expending. And it's the same thing with money.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to steal your thunder.
Oh, no, you're good. Yeah, no, but literally what you just said. So it's the other thing like to think about is mix up your meal, right? You know, go and get, you know, like maybe, you know, like other foods, try different, you know, try different meat, maybe switch to fish occasionally. Like variety is the spice of life and money should be used in that way. You shouldn't say, oh man, I need to cut everything out. If you have a scarcity, that's your framework in which you're doing things, is it everything has to be scarce? That's not going to feel good. Try switching it up, right? If you enjoy going to a movie every week, maybe watch it at home. Figure out what the actual part of going to the movie is that you actually enjoy, right? Maybe it's the popcorn. Maybe it's just spending time with the people that you want to spend time with.
So the sacrifice you make isn't necessarily the sacrifice to take away from what you enjoy, but to still get what you're getting out of it while not necessarily putting all the funds towards it.
Exactly. Like, if going out to a restaurant, if it's about the food, maybe go online and look up some, you know, like, hot cuisine. Spend a week learning how to do it. Fail at it, right? Like, there's different ways you can approach this.
Meals with friends.
Meals with friends, yeah. Maybe you do a potluck, so that way you can get that fix, right? I personally enjoy not making my own food sometimes. That's what I get out of restaurants. So, you know, potluck, right? I'll bring stuff over and vice versa. Or meal swap. That's another way that you can approach this. There's, be creative is essentially the point, right? Just like that, you know, that cup of broccoli, that half a sweet potato, and that one single chicken breast at every meal is going to drive you crazy. You know, if that person were to switch it up, they could probably have the same, maybe even less calories and still feel fulfilled because, you know, they're doing it differently. Another way to look at this in a way that it is similar to, you know, to food to some extent, is there are things that you can do that have massive effects that aren't dense to some extent, right? If that person also added in a zucchini and salad, right? That's not dense, right? That's not calorically dense. It'll make them feel way more full. So there are things that you can do.
Hummus.
Oh my God.
Hummus is a great one. But anyway, which brings us back to finances.
But in all seriousness, like if you think about it, there are things that you can do that will essentially give you that variety, right? Like you can open up new accounts. You can, if you have a new account, one of the best things you can do is basically just say, I'm going to put $20 a week or $20 from every paycheck, throw it into that account. And then basically forget that account exists, and that's going to accrue over time.
Yeah, and actually, that's a great one because...
you're not going to feel it, yeah.
But even in addition to that, on the new accounts, there's a lot of banks that actually do send out promotions every once in a while. You probably get those mailers and you throw them in the trash. Take a look at some of them. There's actually some great promos in some of those account offerings, where some of these banks will give you a few hundred dollars to open an account. And there's usually a few strings typically attached, and a lot of it comes down to the length of time you keep the account. So if you open the account and you put the minimum amount in and they give you, say, the $200 bonus, if you can't just pull that money out right away. So they typically say there's a hold time of 6 months. But even if you were making, say it was $1,000 minimum to open the account, they give you $200, you'd have to make, say you just kept it for the 6 months and you decided to close the account, or even the full year, or even 2 years. Yeah. And you made no other interest on that money. And it was $1,000 minimum. You didn't have to put any other money into that account. They just paid you 20%.
Yeah.
You made 20% on your money. You could leave that money there, and if you left it there for 2 years, it's not exactly, but pretty much 10% a year, basically, within some error. But yeah, you're effectively making about 10% a year for 2 years, or 20% for that 1 year, and then you could pull your money out, and you could keep the entire bonus. And that's $200
extra. Yeah.
The other way of looking at this, going back to that scarcity mindset, right? You could also just, suppose you don't have that $1,000, so you can open up one of these accounts and hold it, right? Another way to look at it is, and you suppose you don't want to do any, you know, like, you're like, I'm not creative. Like, I don't really want to think about things differently. If you make the one change where you're thinking about your future self, here's what I want to do with this when I retire, that is going to make it a positive. Because now you are saving for something that is a benefit to you in the future. There have been studies done that show when people were shown aged pictures of themselves, right? Like pictures that were artificially put through a computer to make them look older, substantially older, they made better financial decisions for their future selves.
Interesting.
So
that's a good one.
Yeah. So like one way you could look at this is what's known as the 4% rule. So you want to only have to take out during retirement 4% of, like, per year, withdraw from the amount of money that you have in order to live off of it. Because in theory, you know, 4% can be mostly replaced, you know, given the stock market, depending on how you invest. You know, ETFs, you can usually get a similar rate of return over the year with those, or even some money in market accounts in not right now. I preface that very, very hard. But the point is, like, look at it that way, right? I'm saving so I can hit that 4% a year. So I can pull out and I will be happy and safe and I will have money for the rest of my life. So switching it up like that might be helpful.
Right. How you look at it goes a long way. Think of I can't tell you how many times I've thought myself, like, man, if I had just left my money in this investment so many years ago, I would have been so much better off than had I sold it and tried to play the swings and done whatever. And there's a lot of things, like, if you can tell yourself, you know, I should have done this 10 years ago, I should have put that money away, I should have not spent that money, because that 10 years back would have made such a profound difference today, then doing that same thing today, while seemingly not that effective, is going to have that same compounding effect 10 years down the road. And if you're planning on living another 10 years, it's probably not a bad way to go, because in 10 years, you're going to think to yourself, man, glad I did that on that one day. Because even though I didn't start 10 years sooner, I still did it today, so that 10 years in the future, I have what I wanted now from then.
Yeah. This goes back to that, like, to a penny saved, a penny earned. And there's another saying that something like, I think it's, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. It's true with this, right? You know, anything you can do to basically make your financial life in the future better today is awesome. I am a big proponent of the kind of set it and forget it things, you know, putting $20 to $50 if you can, or whatever you can, just pull it out of your paycheck and put it in an account and try to forget about that account. I recently realized past Aaron did that, and I'm very, very, I'm very, very happy with that. So it's, the less work you do on a daily basis, the more likely you are to stick to it, right? That's why meal prepping works. You know, going back to food. So clearly you can tell I'm a little fluffy.
Figured that one out.
But in all seriousness, like, if you can meal prep, your meals are there for you, right? Now all you have to deal with is the other psychological things, right? I know that sounds mundane, and I know that sounds like it, you know, like, oh, that doesn't mean anything. But this also goes back to that why, right? So just like, you know, just like with money and food, why do you go out and why do you want to, like, you know, like, why do you want to go to a restaurant? For some people, it's hanging out with their friends and they feel like they'll be giving something up if they don't go out and eat with them, right? Both financially and financially, socially, and, you know, food wise. So invite people over, try to change it, right? The other thing is, like, be open and honest with people. That's another thing that's extremely helpful. Sometimes it, you know, just being like, you know, I can't afford to do this. I'm planning, you know, I want to have X in the future. The other person, whoever it is most likely going to go, oh, okay, cool. I understand. If they don't, that's not someone you want to have as a friend anyways.
Yeah, because they should understand where you're coming from on it.
Yeah, even if it's food-wise, you know, like,
right.
I'm trying to lose weight. Cool, that makes sense. Let me support you. I'll come over. Or, okay, cool, then, you know, we'll hang out next time or whatever. I know that sounds super simple. It's super easy for me to say that right now, but, you know.
It's tough going to somebody and going like, hey, I'm trying to do this. I'm not going to do these things. Would appreciate some help.
Yeah. It's
because it's hard to ask for help.
People will respect that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good people.
Good people. Hopefully.
Weeds a lot of people out.
It does actually weed a ton of people out. But yeah, but in all seriousness, that's like, you didn't get into debt and you didn't make poor financial decisions because you were being logical, right? To some extent. Or because you're being purely illogical. It goes both ways.
Or right? Put in a bad situation.
Yeah. It took a lot of little errors or little things to get there. So
let's flip this a little bit. What do you do to get yourself to the point of where you want to retire? What are some of your strategies in particular that you've gone and implemented that you found to be successful for you?
Well, first and foremost, like I mentioned, just basically, you know, putting aside money every single week and basically saying I will not touch that has been like the biggest thing for me. The second biggest thing is see how your employer or if your employer matches for your 401k or for, you know, for whatever retirement account you have. If they do, that is literally free money.
Yeah, maximize that.
Maximize that as much as you possibly can, right? So that's the second thing. The third thing is, you know, trying to make sure that those around me understand, you know, what's behind my decisions, right? So that way they don't take it personally. And it feels easier for me as well to do that when I do that, because now I'm not giving this up and this person's going to, you know, like judge me or something. No, they know why I'm doing this. So that's a big one. And then trying to save as much as I possibly can and trying to cut down on my lifestyle as much as I dislike to sometimes has been helpful. But I really honestly focusing in on the future has been wildly helpful. And I would say the last thing is having a budget and not, I don't want to say sticking to it, because that's not the right way of phrasing it, but changing my budget as I'm doing something is extremely helpful, right? And I usually don't drill down to, like, you know, I'm going to spend $18 in toilet paper this month. Like, I just don't do that. I'm like, okay, I know Target, like when I usually go to like Target or go to, you know, like a, you know, General Holmes place or something, I'm going to try to limit that to, like, for me, actually the number is, I think, $253 a month. Like, that's going to include, you know, like toiletries. It's going to include, you know, all of these different things. I know where that's going to be, and that's helped me a tremendous amount. The other thing I do, if I'm really, really struggling mentally, is I would literally say, here's what the past couple months have been. So once again, I do have a budget that I actually kind of adjust as I go. So that way I know exactly what I've done in the past. Because knowing what you've done in the past almost for me is as beneficial as knowing what I want to do for the future. So now I'm able to say, like, I know I've done X amount going backwards, right? So going forwards, what I usually do is I literally go to a bank and I have envelopes with me and I pull out what I want to spend that month and I divide that money into those envelopes and I physically use that cash to pay for things.
Huh. Interesting.
Because then
it's real.
It's not only is it real, but now there's something tangible,
and right?
And it's like if those toiletries and all of that sort of stuff is only going to be, you know, $200 this month, then I better get to it. It's like going to an arcade when you're younger and your parents would give you like a, you know, I don't know. I haven't been to an arcade in a long time, so whatever I say is going to either be wildly above or below. So just, you know.
Here's $5. Have fun.
Yeah, essentially. It's like, you know, $5. Here's a $20 bill. Like,
yeah, stretch it as like, far as it'll go.
Exactly. And you had fun figuring out how to do that. Like, it's
you're shopping for where to put your money.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You have a constraint. That's the one problem if you're not good with a credit card is there's not really a constraint down there. It's way above what you can feasibly spend in a month.
Not even just that. Think about how you have to keep all those numbers in your head.
Right.
Like when I go to the grocery store and I have only $200 with me, and that's what I'm going to spend. Usually that's like what I do for a month. So, you know, like I'll say like, you know, $100 or like whatever. Here's what I have for like this trip. It forces me. Maybe I'm not going to, you know, to buy steak. Maybe I'll buy, you know, that large thing of chicken breast over there. You know, I'm going to buy things in season. So I actually end up eating healthier. Honestly, it's like because now I'm buying. Because
you're physically constrained.
I'm physically constrained. So that is like, that is the biggest thing that I find helpful in terms of like looking at finances. I try to treat that, like that amount as what I'm going to do. I understand that, you know, like, hey, maybe the Super Bowl's this month or something. The Super Bowl is not this month. But like, you know, you want to have people over. Fine. But now I know that. I plan that in.
The NBA Finals.
NBA Finals, exactly. You know, I'm not going to go order venison because that's probably going to be super expensive. / I also really don't know where to get venison.
It's so good, though.
It is very good. But that's a totally different thing.
Come back to food. All right, yeah. So you physically constrain yourself. Is this a way for you to balance your work life? Concept is like nebulous, kind of wherever you want, not defined.
Oh, life, you joke, but yes.
You got to balance your life with some constraints on the other side.
100%.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But yeah, that's like, those are the things I found the most beneficial is like basically investing as much as you can, set it and forget it, right? Your retirement fund, as much as you can, set it and forget it. Keep track of your actual expenses. If you do it in Mint, great. If you do it in, you know, YNAB, if you do it in, you know, in a spreadsheet, it doesn't matter. But keep track of those expenses. I prefer ones that auto import, so that way I don't really have to do anything.
Takes time out of it for
sure. But then actually go back and look at what you've spent on, because you're gonna notice trends. One, and two, now with knowing those trends, you can make simple choices that will actually impact you. Right. Another thing is challenge your expenses. Right. If you do this for a couple months and you notice like, holy cow, I spent a ton on coffee. This is not at all personal. It's very personal. I spent a ton of money on coffee recently and I'm like, and I ask myself, like, you know, do I actually enjoy this? Like, what do I enjoy about the coffee? Right. And part of it is just, I enjoy going out of my house and having like a destination. Which is a different thing than needing
coffee. You just fill it with coffee.
I just fill it with coffee because it's a destination that like I go to. So now I'm like, I'm going to walk to the lake. I'm going to walk to the river. I'm going to walk to X place.
With coffee.
With coffee. Yeah. I make coffee at home and I go there and then that's where I enjoy it. And now I get the same benefit that I got from the coffee. It's little things that you can do that actually I find
quite profound.
Yeah. So if you feel like you're trapped by something, think about why you need to do that, why you want to do that. You know, if it's food that you feel trapped by, realize that like maybe you don't need to eat the way that you're eating, right? If it's you feel trapped by movies or social things, rethink those, okay? Maybe you still go out to the bar, but instead of, you know, buying six beers, you know, maybe you just have soda, like soda water when you get there, right? Because maybe you're not even enjoying the drinking, right? There's a whole bunch of different ways that you can approach things. And if you actually get to the real reason on why you want that, it's easier to figure out whether or not you need to keep that. And then worst comes to worst, if you know you need to cut it and you know it's going to be hard, think about your future self. And that is what I find most impactful.
Yeah, there's actually one thing I want to add to some of the things that you said. Yeah. On the budgeting side and kind of playing that game with yourself is when you're setting that budget, don't be aspirational.
Oh, yeah.
So this one's tough. And I think people typically set a budget that's aspirational and you did get discouraged because you didn't make your aspirational goals in month one. And then it's like, well, I didn't meet this and I didn't meet this or I can't do this. And then you feel anxious about what you can and can't do. What I found to be really beneficial with budgeting and to find out what those expenses are and then start pruning the ones out that aren't meaningful for you is set a budget based on your actuals, right? Mm-hmm. So you take an average, you can take your last several months, whatever, figure out what those numbers are. A lot of those online tools like a Mint will help you figure some of those things out. And you set your budget based on what you've been actually spending. And then if you've been living at that level, then set that as your bar. And then your goal every month is to figure out where you can prune things away. And as you can consistently prune them away, you can reduce that in your budget. And so then your budget becomes something realistic and it becomes a continuous work in progress towards the goals that you're looking to set to get yourself to the place that you want to be to again achieve your goals. Mm-hmm. So you can have these little mini milestones of every month, you know, you can prune away a certain thing versus going full gamut, I'm doing everything, and now you hate yourself for the next month, which really isn't going to help because then you're going to probably reverse back the other way worse than you were before and spend on things you really don't need because it didn't work the first month. That's usually how people stop going to the gym, yeah. Right? New Year's resolutions. Gyms are full first month of the year, and then they're empty.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go full bore on it. Just set it as actual, and every month figure out the one thing. It doesn't have to be like, I'm going to get this from, 100% to 20%. It's how do I get it to 95%? Then how do I get it to 90%? And then 85%, and so on. So every week you're making incremental gains. Just like, say, you go to the gym. You make incremental gains. You can't go to the gym and say, I'm going to lose 25 pounds of fat. I'm going to build 25 pounds of muscle. And I'm going to double my, my bench and my squat in the next 2 weeks. It's not going to happen. You're going to be really sore and you're probably going to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And you're going to hate yourself. And then you're going to stop going to the gym. So it's just the same thing with budgeting, right? And when you go to the gym, start at your actual. And every week you increment and increment and increment. And you figure out how you want to get to that goal. And putting that plan together with that budget helps you figure that piece out.
Yeah. I'd actually add one more thing on that, which is if you come across an expense and you really just say you can't cut it, right? Like, this might sound counterintuitive, but going back to the dieting example, if you say, I'm going to cut sugar entirely out of my diet and I'm never ever going to eat it again, you will fail. You will, and I know. I'm not trying to sound funny, but it's true. If there's something that you feel like you cannot do without, that is an extravagance, be aware of that, and make a conscious choice to do that. Right, like if for me going to the getting that coffee, is that extravagance for me? Then I need to plan for that. And then if I do plan for that, I won't feel guilty doing that. I've built that in. That's my breaking mechanism, right? Like, now I'm consciously aware so I can budget for it, right? That's the other thing is like, we're talking about like trying to get rid of things, but if there is something like, you need to go out to a restaurant once a month because that's your extravagance for the month.
Do it.
Do it, but build it in so that this will actually, in the long term, reduce the amount of stress. Because now, instead of like, oh no, I don't know where that money's going to come from, you know exactly where that money's coming from. You've planned for it. And just like once again, trying to lose weight, most of the time, like if you, like dietitians or doctors will tell you, just record what you're eating first before you start making cuts.
Set that baseline. But yeah, the psychology plays such a big role in it. We talked about it on how markets react to things, how market cycles are boom and bust, yeah. And how there's overreactions to things. It's the same, like the psychology plays into everything. And it just like it plays in with your diets and with your working out, on going full bore and not getting there because the expectations or the goal isn't set appropriately, just the same thing happens financially speaking. And so if you can get that stuff set up for yourself, that's the biggest thing you can do to get yourself to the place you want to be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a pretty decent place to stop.
I think so too. So the next place we're going to go, I think, is going to be on certain types of investments that are non-traditional and can potentially get you things that you're looking for in addition to just a return on your money, but potentially a return on your future.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, it's... We'll talk about it when we get there a little bit, but it's like anything from like green investing all the way through to, you know, specific issue related investing is sort of kind of what we're looking at. And there's a whole lot there.
There's a lot. So thank you so much for listening. We are Two Halves Make a Whole.
I'm Aaron Blumenthal.
And I'm Mike Cherney. Have a good night, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.